Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Firewater Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is General Sean M. Myers. Hi, Sean. Welcome back to the show.
At ease, Kelly.
I am always at ease when you're on the show. This is like, I think you're at the very least is your fifth appearance. I think you had more than one in earlier seasons. So this might even be like your sixth or seventh. So you've definitely earned your battlefield commission at this
point. I'm always happy to chopper in to do a show.
Thank you very much. And I believe this is, This is your first MASHcast since you became part of the Firewater Podcast Network. That's very exciting.
That is correct. It's nice. I understand now it's nice to be on the other side where I don't have to do that much prep work for a show.
The classic, better have them inside the tent pissing out rather than outside the tent pissing in.
To quote
Abraham Lincoln, I believe. So, okay. Of course, we're in the middle of season five. This time we're talking about episode 16, Ping Pong. The original air date was January 18th, 1977, written by Sid Dorfman and directed by William Jurgensen. The 477th is watching with bated breath an inter-camp ping pong tournament, and their best player, Cho Lin, played by Richard Narita, is facing off against the player from the 8055th. Cho ends up winning, and of course everyone is thrilled, except for Frank, who bet against his own unit. I got 3-1 odds, he protests. After surgery, Cho brings his fiancée, Suni, led by the swamp, where he announces that they're going to be married. Hawkeye and BJ offer to hold the ceremony at the 477th, and even pony up money so Cho can afford a wedding ring. Frank scoffs at Hawkeye and BJ's naivete. Cho left Seoul to get the ring, and Suni becomes worried and then inconsolable when Cho doesn't come back on time. Suni begins to cry, saying she doesn't think Cho is ever coming back. Hawkeye tries to reassure her, and Frank thinks all of it is very funny. Later on, wounded arrive, and one of those hurt is Cho. Turns out that when he was in Seoul, a South Korean army truck came by, grabbed him, put a uniform on him, and sent him into battle. After tending to his rather minor wounds, Frank demands to know why Hawkeye and BJ haven't shipped Cho out. They try and bluff their way out of it, but Frank is adamant, even drawing up a formal list of charges against them for various infractions. Colonel Potter asks Hawkeye and BJ why Cho hasn't been shipped out, and they tell him about the upcoming wedding. At first, that doesn't mollify Potter, but he changes his mind when Hawkeye says Potter will be giving away the bride. Potter, beaming with pride, agrees to let the ceremony commence. The wedding, a Buddhist ceremony where no words are spoken, is performed, with everyone watching and bursting into applause when it's over. Frank wanders over to the wedding cake, taking a taste of it when no one's looking. Later, Radar and Colonel Potter play ping pong, and Radar can barely contain his laughter as he beats Potter so easily. All right, Sean, ping pong, a really fun episode. We'll get into the specifics of it in a moment. What's your overall impression, though, of this episode?
I wanted to do this this show for two reasons. The first one is MASH related, and the other one is not MASH related. So the MASH related reason is definitely we're used to having like the two storylines running at the same time, and usually one is out and out funny or definitely more lighthearted than the other storyline. But I think both of these storylines are fairly serious. You have the wedding storyline, which by in itself is kind of light, but when Cho goes missing and then you find out that he's been shanghaied into the army, I mean that's like really scary if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course the Potter storyline, where he has to confront a friend who is acting horribly just to get a commission. Like, both of those are really heavy storylines. And this is probably the first, fully, and there are lighthearted moments, obviously, but this is like the first really like double-barreled drama episode of MASH that I can really remember.
That's interesting. Yeah, of course, I didn't even mention the B-plot in my synopsis, which is this whole bit about there's an old friend of Colonel Potter's shows up as part of the wounded, and he's a colonel. And they find out that some other people in his unit reveal to Hawkeye and BJ that this colonel was basically given this battlefield commission as sort of a favor almost by the higher ups. and he froze in the moment and got a lot of people unnecessarily wounded. And that turns to Colonel Potter investigating it and then basically deciding that, as he says, I'm sending you down, which he says is basically, not to put too fine a point, of kind of like ratting him out a little and saying, this guy should not go back to the line. He's not fit for battle. And, of course, Colonel Potter's friend argues against it, but Potter's argument is, hey, if you get one person killed, the price is too high for your stupid battlefield commission. So, yeah, and, of course, there's if that plot sounds familiar to you MASH fans, we'll talk about that in a minute, why it does. But, yeah, you're right. The ping-pong storyline, of course, which is what this episode is named for, is more lighthearted. But, yeah, when the act break, which, again, we'll get to, when Cho disappears, is really upsetting. And I think part of that is due to the performances by the two guest actors that play Cho and Suni. As I mentioned, Richard Narita plays Cho and Sachiko Lee plays Suni. And they're both terrific in this part. And so the show opens up with Cho. By the way, of course, you know, everyone seems to know Cho. He's like a family friend, and like we've never seen this guy before, and we never will again. But okay, those are episodes of MASH that we never saw, where Cho was constantly hanging around.
I'm almost positive that he bunks with the dentist.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He runs the library or something. You know, the thing that we never see. The show opens up with the ping pong game, and we see that, as far as I can tell from the way it's cut together, Richard Narita and the other actor who is playing the ping pong champion, who is uncredited, they're genuinely playing. They're not cutting to hands or anything. They're not cutting to doubles. Now, not that ping pong necessarily requires you to be a super skilled athlete, although, of course, they do ping pong in the Olympics, so what the hell do I know?
Right there, that's the other reason why I wanted to talk about this episode, because... So there is the debate whether or not ping pong is a sport or a game, but I can definitively tell you it is a game because I'm horrible at sports. Mm-hmm. And not only do I love playing ping pong, but I'm fairly good at it. my partner Amante and I, he used to have this really nice big dining room table. And one year for Christmas, we got a ping pong net that you would string up between at the halfway point of your dining room table. And we would play ping pong on that dining room table.
Wow.
Now, unfortunately, his kids moved into like a super huge house and they needed a dining room table. And it really was too big for our dining room. So we gave it to them. So I lost my ping pong table. but the other ping pong related story I have is, my friend Eddie Cameron and I went to Walt Disney World one year, and we stayed at the Pop Century Resort, and they have a ping pong table right by the pool. So every day when we would come home for our afternoon break, we would play ping pong, but you have to buy your own ping pong ball. So I would always just carry it in my pocket, and then when we were coming back to the afternoon break, we would just go up to the table. But one time there was a father and his daughter standing there, and we both kind of approached the table at the same time to play, but I reached in my pocket and pulled out my ping pong ball, and the guy said, oh, wait, honey, these guys are serious about their game.
I'm picturing a scene from like The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, where it's all these close-ups of your eyes and stuff, and then you slowly... pull the bong out. Oh, geez. Okay. Right.
You saw my finger twitching right at the ball.
Exactly. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That sense has probably never been uttered ever in history. These guys are really serious about their people. Again, it's an Olympic sport. Anything that's an Olympic sport is almost by definition something I cannot do. So I don't mean to mock ping pong at all. But at the same time, like I said, I thought it was impressive that at the very least, Richard Narita and again, the other actors are really doing this. They're really playing. They're not, obviously, they were good enough to make it look like a real game, look like these were actually champions. So as they're watching the play, Hawkeye makes a joke about that he hasn't seen a backhand that good since he tried an exploratory on Nurse Baker, which is a good line. And then I love that Potter laughs at it. And that's the kind of thing I always wonder, is that in the script or was that just a genuine response by Harry Morgan to Alan Alda's line? You know, because it's most of the time we don't see the characters laugh at each other's jokes. That's usually not the way you write television, but I just love that he does a little chuckle when Hawkeye makes that joke about Nurse Baker.
And I think it's great in that scene that Cho gets genuinely funny lines. Because a lot of times the guest actors who are driving the plot, they don't get the funny bits, but he has the line about apple pie and that, like, he'd rather have the cash.
Yeah.
And I laughed at both of them, yeah.
He's talking into Hawkeye's paddle because Hawkeye's doing like a post-game analysis kind of thing. It leads to a great scene for Jeff Maxwell playing Igor, where he realizes, he says, I guess I paid out too much. There's no money left. And Hawkeye's like, I'm a winner. And then Radar has the line, which is meant to be consoling, but of course not at all. You're lucky. A lot of guys lost. Just like, oh, what fat good does that do me? Exactly. So we find out that, as I said, that Frank bet against the unit again. This has been a recurring theme across season five, is that they were, of course, at a bit of a loose end with Frank, and they didn't really know what, post Margaret's engagement, they really didn't know what to do with him. Mm-hmm. And so they toggled between, episodes like Margaret's engagement, where we actually see a kind of a human side of him, and then other episodes like this one, where he's just a dick. He's just a massive dick. He's racist. He's rude. He bumps into Cho at one point in the scrub room, and he yells at Cho for getting in his way, even though he clearly did it. And then later on, I said, when poor Suni is crying because she thinks Cho has been killed, he thinks it's funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's one thing to be indifferent, but to think it's funny, you're like, God, what an ass this guy is. And I know we've been saying it kind of every week at this point, but like, that's got to have been so tough for Larry Linville to play, just to be so, everyone else is so nice, and he's playing just such a jerk.
It would be interesting, and I've said this when I'm on the show before, it would be interesting to see if they would have, rehabbed Frank's character, how they would have gone about it. Because they did it with Margaret.
Yep.
But like, did they kind of, write him into a corner where he couldn't have been redeemed? Yeah, it probably was fortuitous that Larry Linville wanted to leave so they could bring Charles in.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like in some ways they, knowing he was leaving, and like, it almost seems like they were leaning into it. Like, let's just give him the most, because I mean, Frank was always kind of racist and stuff like that. But I feel like this season they're really, and just making him cruel.
Yeah.
The two episodes previous, where he tells the most unforgettable characters, where he tells the story about the little kid in the wheelchair that slams into his father's car, and he thinks it's funny. I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Like, any of any basic humanity at all? So next there's a scene in OR, and we meet Colonel Harold Beckett, who is one of the wounded. He's played by an actor named Frank Maxwell. He passed away in 2004. He was in movies like Wild Angels, Mr. Majestic, a really great Charles Bronson movie, TV shows like The Rockford Files, Barnaby Jones, Ironside. He was on a Gilligan's Island, even. and we find out that he is friends with Potter. And, again, this is some, Potter, one of the benefits of having a character who has been in the army, as long as you can constantly have an ending stream of friends that Potter has known over the years and stuff like that. And, of course, he's wounded in the butt. So, therefore, the surgery is not that big of a deal. In fact, MPJ even says nothing serious, which leads to Colonel Potter saying they're trained in they're specializing in Alfred's butts. They're trained in brain surgery. and even though Harry Morgan's got half his face covered in the face mask, you could just see the delight in his eyes, the squint at his eyes. He's really having fun, sort of torturing his friend there.
The thing I like about Beckett and Potter's relationship is you really get that they enjoy each other's company. They enjoy making each other laugh. Like, they, they toss the jokes back and forth. And like, it's such a great script writing device to have that, like, casual friendship, the funniness of it, because then it just hits all that much harder when Potter has to bring the hammer down.
Yep, absolutely. So later on in the swamp, Cho and Suni arrive and they talk about that they're getting married. I thought it was funny when at one point they BJ apologizes for the mess, and Cho is like, oh, you got mess, Suni will clean, spick and span. And she starts cleaning, sort of in almost as a matter of habit almost. And there's a she picks up a broom And I love that it leads to that great line where Hawkeye says, I don't know how this got in here. And he just throws it away. But there's a comment, there's a joke where he says, you have to forgive the place. Our houseboy was drafted 2 years ago.
Yep.
And I got to wonder, is that, and I mean, you know, we know that MASH didn't pay too terribly much attention to its history, but I got to wonder, was that a reference to Ho-John? Are they acknowledging that Ho-John exists in this current continuity?
I definitely think it works just as a, you know, if you've never ever seen MASH, I think this works as, you know, a funny thing, like, you know, my houseboy got drafted. Yeah. But yeah, I think people who love MASH want it to be a reference to him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, it's like, oh, Ho-John. Okay. Yeah. Great. Those early seasons are still part of continuity. Spirit Chucker did live in the tent at some point. They never mentioned him, but he did. I do want to mention again, the two actors playing Cho and Suni. Suni is played by an actress simply named Sachiko. One word, one name. She was in movies like Beverly Hills Ninja, Gremlins 2. She's been on TV shows like House, Shameless. This is her second of two MASHes. She was the mother in the season 3 episode Life with Father. She's the Korean woman who is trying to get a bris done for her infant son. And it's the same actress here. And then Richard Narita. He was in movies like Drop Dead Gorgeous and then TV shows like Dallas, Magnum P.I., Wonder Woman, Quincy. But his other credit, that the reason I love him so much is that he's great here as Cho, but he is the number one son in Murder by Death, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
And that movie was made in like 1975, so this is 70. They would have made this in 76, so these two credits would have been kind of very close to one another. Now, I will tell you, I love Richard Narita so much because he has this credit and, of course, Murder by Death. I actually looked him up on the internet. He is still, as far as I can tell, he is still around. He doesn't have any credits for at least a couple of years. But I tracked down his agency to try and contact him. And I left several phone calls at supposedly his agency, and they've never returned my calls. And I got really frustrated because, not to be ghoulish, but, you know, mm-hmm. people pass away, and you don't want to waste time. You know what I mean? I did that once for a couple people that I've tried to reach out to where I waited just a little too long and then they passed away. And I always feel like, oh boy, I really shouldn't have, you know, I should have gotten on that when I thought of it as opposed to just kind of killing time. And so anyone out there, if you know how to get in contact with Richard Narita, please let me know because I desperately want to talk to this man. He is only one of three cast members still around from Murder by Death. Him, Maggie Smith, and James Cromwell. Everyone else is gone at this point. And I just would love to talk to him about his career, this episode of MASH, Murder by Death, of course. So anyway, and just putting it out there for everybody. If you can find Richard Narita, please let him know. I'm desperately want to talk to him. But aside from all that, he's great. And
he's really great. Like first of all, like, he's just so handsome. But his grin is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He has such a handsome grin.
Yep. It's very, very joyful, you know, mm-hmm. He radiates that. I think he's just absolutely terrific. And I love the way when he kind of does this inflection on his voice, which, you know, sounds a little like, of course, that's what actors do. But when he kind of like is more shy, he kind of does like a whisper a little, which I really like. I like the kind of changes where he's talking about the ring, you know, and he's like, I have an uncle in Seoul who sells wholesale. Also a little retail. Like he just kind of whispers it a little, like he's kind of like letting Hawkeye and BJ in on a secret. I think he's just terrific. I would have loved to have seen him come back in other episodes. I think I don't know what they maybe would have done with him, but I really like this character and I wish he had appeared more than just this one show.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's fantastic.
So he talks about that he needs a little more money for the ring, and Hawkeye and BJ give him the money. And of course, that's right at the moment that Frank comes in and he makes fun of them for, you know, he's saying, you guys are fools. You'll never see the money. And, you know, it's just, you know, he talks about, you know, I love the whole bit about, you know, being, you have a, you know, bad judge of character. And he says, you know, never give your money to an Oriental, which is just like, ugh. You know, then later on, we see that he's in, presumably the supply. Oh, he is in the supply room. You see it on the door. And Radar brings Suni in to a place. She's applying for a job. And, you know, he insists on, like, everyone has to be checked. And, you know, he puts her through a security check. And then we even find out that she was a babysitter for a general's children, which is like, wow. Even Frank is like, wow. Like, that's kind of a nice credit to have. I mean, what else is there really what are you worried about, Frank? Come on, what are you expecting?
There is one thing in this section that I didn't understand. When also in this scene, Frank is being just so mean to Radar nonstop. But the Philip Morris joke, is it because when you smoke, it stunts your growth? Is that the joke?
No, Philip Morris, the mascot for Philip Morris was a little person. Call for Philip Morris. That was the thing. In fact, if you have you ever seen Pulp Fiction?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, in the scene where they go to Jack Rabbit Slim's, when John Travolta and Uma Thurman are at their table, a guy walks by, a little person walks by, and he yells, "Call for Philip Morris." And that's what the reference is. So, yeah, he calls Radar a half pint, and then he finally says, you know, "I'll hear from him if I want to, you know, if there's a call for Philip Morris." And so, yeah, he's just making fun of Radar because he's short. And again, I love Radar's, you know, offended face. It's that kind of like, you know, he's just like, yes, he's just so like, why are you so mean? You know, I mean, he can't say anything. And I love that. And then after that, when Frank's not looking, he kind of like, he's like grunting a little, like he's kind of looking at Frank, like, and Frank can't see him, but he's just kind of like, this guy. And I mean, he talks, you know, he asks Sun Li about, have you ever been to like Mongolia or Manchuria? And you're like, you know, Frank's like, you can't even get to Seoul without a limb. What are you talking about? Yeah. Like, come on. Oh my God. It's a funny scene, but it is kind of, it really is there just to kind of, I think, fill a little time. And again, just make Frank look just extra awful. So back in post-op, Colonel Potter talks to his pal, Beckett. And they do this great flashback, you know, where they tell a story about.
Well, no, it's, you're right. It's not a flashback.
No.
It's episode 6 of Young Sherman Potter Chronicles.
Exactly. Where they go, they said, remember the Camp Grant? There were those two girls we picked up in Chicago. And he says, if memory serves, mine was the cutie. Yours looked like Man of War. And it was just not the nicest thing Colonel Potter has ever said. And then, of course, Beckett's like, wait a minute, I think I married that girl. And Potter just, oh, that's right, mine looked like Man of War. Very nice. Very nice, Colonel Potter. And then so they get into this whole conversation about, you know, what were you doing up there? I mean, because he's normally in supply. Mm-hmm. And and he says, well, I did it to get my battlefield commission. I can get without on my record, the boys in Washington can move me up and I can retire a full colonel. And of course, at the end, that's all about how much money you're going to make post service. That's all that it is.
But I also think, I do think it's that. I also think it's the ego of the rank. Like, I just think it's the two of them hand in hand, my rank and my money.
Right, yeah, and nobody wants to be a lieutenant colonel if it's the kind of thing that you care about. Like I said, Henry never cared about being a full colonel. He was fine being lieutenant colonel. But these guys, you know, a regular army guy wants to be a full colonel. So after that, there is a scene that was always cut in syndication. Never saw this on the DVDs, where Hawkeye does an extended flirtation with Nurse Bigelow, played by Enid Kent, of course, and she rejects him. And then that's when he sees Suni standing at the sort of the end of the camp and crying. But that whole scene was, I never saw it until I got the DVDs.
Now, was Suni cut her crying?
No, that part, that part's there. But
just the flirt. Okay.
Everything with Nurse Bigelow is cut. You just sort of see him walking the camp and then he sees Suni. And by Sachiko in this part is great. Yeah. Again, she's really inconsolable, just the way she's like, no, Cho not come back. And she's, you know, it's she's like a puppy, you know, like it's so sad. And again, it's Frank's got his coffee cup and he's just like, ha ha ha, you know, it's like, good. But luckily, that's the act break and we come back for act two and we see Cho is back. And again, pre-op, he talks about what happened to him. He says, two MPs grabbed him and threw him in a truck and he says, you drafted. And that was a real thing that went on. That they grabbed people off the street, put a gun in their hand, and made them fight. And it's like, you know, geez.
It's horrifying to think about.
Yeah, I mean, he said getting like 2 hours of basic training or something. I mean, that's it. You know, imagine being put on the front lines and just being told to go shoot people, and you're like, what? You know, what's going on? So, but yeah, that's a thing that really happened. I mean, that MASH would talk about that in other episodes later on in the series of people being, I'm not even conscripted. That's more formal than it really was. It's really they say Shanghai, which is getting like a little bit of a, you know, kind of a reductive kind of way of referring to it, but it really is kind of true. It's just being stolen off the street and thrown out, you know? So then Frank wants to check in on it. Frank wants to check on Cho, and they want him to send out because his injuries aren't that bad. And then Potter calls Hawkeye and BJ into his office and wants to demand. There's a list of grievances filed by – I love that the paper literally is the list of grievances. We can sort of see that there's type on it. I always wonder what that stuff really says.
You know, I tried to pause it both on the disc and on streaming, and it's not legible enough to read, but I tried. I tried to give my all for this podcast.
I appreciate that. Yeah, you wonder, is it the script that they're going to do? Is it just a bunch of like, you know, kind of like what they do to fill in newspapers? Like it's all Latin, ipsum quorum, you know, that kind of stuff. I would love to know what that stuff is. And Burns is threatening, says to tell General Harrison, and he wants to know why Cho hasn't been moved on. And he talks about that there's complications. Cho wants to get married. And I love that Potter has the green line where he says in something like in 11 months, no, it died 16 months, 3 weeks, and four days, I'm going to be standing on my patio back in Nebraska barking, why are you wetting on my charcoal?
That's fantastic.
That is great. It's such a wonderful visual of Hawkeye there, just standing there, you know, back in his patio in Nebraska. And of course, Hawkeye immediately comes to the, you know, face saving thing where it's like, you're giving away the bride, knowing that Potter would fall for it. I love that in that moment, when you see that it clearly has just occurred to Hawkeye in that moment to pull the kind of pull this, BJ smiles at Hawkeye. And I love it. I love it's that kind of like he admires his friend for pulling a rabbit out of his hat, out of a hat. Like, great.
Yeah.
So Potter is, you know, beaming with pride. He says, you know, I wish mother was here. She loves to cry because he's all in now. Potter is all in. So then we have another scene in post-op where Hawkeye and BJ are talking to one of Beckett's men, a Sergeant Blanchard. And Blanchard tells them what really happened is that Beckett froze, and he says the men were laughing at him, and he says, you know, they can court-martial me all they want, but, you know, if it wasn't for Beckett, none of us would be here now. This guy, Blanchard, is played by Robert Phelan. He was in movies like Starman, 3 Days of the Condor, and Halloween. And if you want to know what he is in Halloween, he is the doctor at the psychiatric hospital that Donald Pleasance talks to after Michael Myers escapes.
Okay.
He talks about it, and he says, you know, where did he learn to drive? Well, he seemed to know pretty well last night. That's Robert Phelan. He passed away in 1995. But I mean, those are some pretty solid movie credits.
And his speech has seen it, like, it really, he just knocks it out of the park. And I know he's just, you know, quote unquote, just a day player. You know, he's probably there for half a day even, but like, and he just has like a few lines, but they have such weight and power. I was really, really impressed with that part.
You wonder how Blanchard knew this. Like, he knows that he has to get X more number of days on the line to get his infantry badge, and then he can promote him to a full colonel. Like, I wonder, like, how does he know that? Did Beckett tell them that? You would think that would be inadvisable to be like, hey guys, I'm only here so I can retire a full colonel. So like, how does he even know that? I mean, he does obviously, but you got to wonder, like, how did that even get to him?
It's funny. I didn't even like, I didn't consciously think of it, but like when you were saying it, like in my mind, I'm like, well, he probably overheard Blanchard. Like he's talking to someone, like one of his buddies or something like that. He's like, yeah, I'm only here for, you know, the next 30 days because I just need my, like, it's funny, like that's not real, it's not true, but, like, in my head, I kind of think it's something like that. And also, I think because they know, like their previous, the previous person who was in charge probably did know what was going on. And then you get this guy. It's almost like when you get a new boss at work and you know more than they do. And you're like, ugh.
Yeah, 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 quite possibly. So the next day, Hawkeye and BJ find Potter as he's playing horseshoes with Klinger. And they tell him what's going on. And then we don't exactly see the full scene. They sort of hint that something's wrong with Colonel Beckett. And Colonel Potter's like, you know, he's a good friend of mine. He's like, yeah, but okay. And then they walk off. And again, obviously they're going to reveal exactly what they know. And then next up is a scene in the mess tent. And this is an extraordinary scene. Part of it is cut in syndication. Not all of it. Part of it. And the part that is so extraordinary is the part that was cut in syndication. Which is, again, it's an amazing moment. So anyway, Margaret is making a wedding dress for Suni, and it's this traditional Buddhist gown, and she is using Radar as her model because he is the person in camp with the closest, presumably the height to Suni. And he's standing on a table, and he feels very ridiculous because he's in his little wool cap and stuff, but he's got like the headpiece on, and he's got this absolutely beautiful gown on. I mean, this thing
is
it's kind of like we were talking about in the Exorcism episode. You don't generally see colors like this on MASH. So it was nice to see, especially all satiny and stuff. But it's an absolutely great moment. So, but anyway, as they're talking, Radar is saying that he feels very uncomfortable dressing like this. And he says, once you get Klinger, he's good at it. And Margaret says, because you're the bride's size, don't move. I love that she's got the pins in her mouth and she's getting upset because, he's moving around. And then he says, back home, this kind of thing doesn't go over too big. And you're like, okay. And then Margaret even says, you never looked better. And he says, we had this guy back home who used to wear dresses just like Klinger, only he wasn't in the army, if you know what I mean. And Margaret responds with, To each his own.
Yeah,
which is, wow. I mean, that is an astoundingly open-minded, progressive view for Margaret. And not the kind of answer I think Margaret, the character, would have given as late as season 3. I think she probably would have had. But I mean, that little chunk of dialogue is cut in syndication. And I remember the first time I saw it when I got the DVD, and my eyes bugged out of my head. I was like, wow, that was what an I mean, we're dealing with this right now with these retrograde views of sexuality and trans people and people that dress. And here you've got Margaret Houlihan in 1952, just kind of to each his own, whatever, it's really amazing.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, so you said like in 1952, she had this view, but this episode was 76, I think you said, right?
77.
So even in 76, 77, it was, pretty remarkable to have that view, much less 52.
Yeah. It's really unbelievable. And then I love the way they kind of, they take it down this path and they think you're going one way and it goes the other. And then, Radar continues his story. So one day this guy Boris is walking down the street with a cotton dress, carrying an umbrella, and my Uncle Ed walks up to him and calls him a sissy. Then, pow, he punches him right in the nose and flattens him. And Margaret's like, your Uncle Ed punched Boris? And he says, no, my Boris flattened Uncle Ed. And, good on you, Boris. I think it's just a absolutely fantastic scene. It's like my favorite. Yeah. It's my favorite scene in the show that doesn't feature Richard Narita. But it's just such a great sequence. And then, of course, we've got Igor and Goldman coming in, making fun of Radar, and Radar tolerates it and stuff. But, saying that obviously not everybody is going to be as open-minded about it as Margaret is. But, man, I don't mean to oversell this, but it really is a pretty amazing section of this show.
It is. And it is things like that you get progress, bit by bit, piece by piece, that's what brings about change. Like, there are definitely, marches and, legislation and that kind of thing. But two, it's little lines like that, like Margaret's, to each their own.
Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable. So the Klinger shows up, and of course he's offended because he says, Radar, you're working my side of the street.
and he, I love that.
Yeah, and he's offended by the fashion of it. Frank shows up and wants to bug Margaret. There's this scene where this scene feels like a little like out of nowhere, where he's like, nothing makes sense. Today's going on, you know? And he's like, we used to have a smooth running war. And you're like, what? What are you even talking about? By the way, in the earlier scene, Igor and Goldman were in the mess tent making fun of Radar, and then they disappear when kind of Margaret shushes them off. And then in a moment when Margaret and Frank are talking on the compound, we see Goldman going into the mess tent with two nurses. So he obviously left the mess tent, found two nurses, and went back into the mess tent for whatever reason. Yeah, you know. But they're not expecting some nerd to be obsessing over this. So Margaret basically just tells Frank to kiss off because, you know, it's kind of a nothing scene. Like, it doesn't really have anything to do with anything. Frank's just seemingly complaining for no good reason exactly. You're like, well, it's a wedding. Why is this so confounding to you? So, but then he tries to stop Margaret by grabbing her arm, and of course gets the expected response from Margaret at that point.
That's why I think the scene is there, because, you know, they specifically say Frank's upset at a wedding, and it's not this wedding that's upsetting him.
Jeez, I never even thought about that.
It's Margaret's wedding to Donald, because it's all like, I know what you're talking about, but you're not talking about, well, I know, well, you didn't have to say that. I think that's exactly what that scene is.
Yep, that makes total sense. I'm ashamed I never saw that after all the times I've seen these episodes, but you're right. He's not upset about this wedding. He's upset about another upcoming wedding.
Yeah,
but he can't say that. Yep, that's it. That's completely. I'm so dumb sometimes. So anyway,
you need to watch MASH more.
Apparently so. Apparently I'm missing these subtle clues that they're dropping in these episodes. So then later in post-op, we see obviously Potter has been informed of what's happened, and presumably he has done his research and found out that what Blanchard said was true, and he confronts Beckett. And, you know, Beckett kind of acknowledges, yeah, you know, I know I shouldn't be up there, but come on, don't do this for me. And Potter is having none of it. And he just says, you know, even if it, you know, costs one life, the price is too high. And he basically says, I'm sending you down. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, we never know the details of this. Like, what kind of power does Potter have to, like, do that? I mean, presumably, he got his Beckett got his Batterfield commission from somebody else. And Potter can what? He can step in and say the guy shouldn't have it? I mean, is Potter really, he has that kind of authority? Maybe as a doctor he does, but I don't know. It's interesting.
I also think probably with as long as Potter has been in the army and the content of his character, I think, you know, like, people respect him and believe him. So if he's, you know, calling around to, you know, stop Beckett, I think the people who Sherman is talking to are going to listen to him and believe him.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. So it's not so much that he's using his colonel power. He's using his Colonel Potter power.
Yeah.
If Colonel Potter calls somebody at I-Corps and says, this guy needs to be taken off the line, they're going to listen to him because he's Colonel Potter.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. All right. That makes sense. Yeah. That makes total sense. So then we cut to the wedding of Cho and Suni. And much like we talked about in the exorcism episode, and even in the Life with Father episode, which shows the Briss, they go full out on the ceremony.
Yeah.
Most of the characters don't have any dialogue. Frank gets a joke that Margaret tells him, basically, shut up. Father Mulcahy sort of narrates the ceremony, so we kind of understand what's going on. But again, I think it's very open-hearted and open-minded of MASH to kind of take this seriously and not edit it down, you know, maybe people thinking, are people going to be bored about this? Let's get to some jokes. No, they just do. I mean, we see Cho was brought in on a white horse, walked in by Radar, which again, I think is a great detail, of course, because we know Radar is so good with animals. But you know, by the way, I love the detail. Cho's arm is still in a sling.
Yeah,
his arm when he was on the line. But then again, they play this out. They just let it run the whole ceremony like it's a real. I mean, like it's a real thing, but like they don't. They just let it show you exactly what it would be like in real time. It's very admirable of the director William Jurgensen and the writer to go this out with it. And I also love that Margaret is watching it and she's crying.
Yeah.
The beauty of it. It's a really nice scene. And even Hawkeye and BJ are in full dress uniforms, which is not something you saw much. You know, you can probably count on one hand the number of times Hawkeye bothered to wear dress uniforms. But he actually, you know, he respects Cho and Sunny so much that he actually does, which I think is really sweet. And then once they get married and everyone is throwing rice and congratulating, we see Frank wander over to the table and start working on the snacks because he is, as usual, the odd man out. So that's the end of the second half of the show. And then we get the bumper scene, which is the ping pong table set up again. By the way, we could see that all the tables in the mess tent have been taken down for the ping pong tournament. So when are people eating? When is this happening? When is this early in the morning or something?
They are dedicated to their craft of ping pong. They'll set it up and then fold up the ping pong table and then put all the other tables back out.
I guess so. So we see Radar and Colonel Potter playing. Radar can't help but laugh every time he spikes the ball on Colonel Potter. And I love that he says, you know, is that how you, he says to Radar, is that how you play the game? It's how you get court-martialed. And you mean that, sir? Of course not. Continue.
No.
Yeah, all right. You know, and he does like kind of waves his paddle a little like, okay. And then Radar beats him. He says, how many points are you going to spot me this time? Like same game last time, 20. Or 16 or whatever it is, because you have to get to 20.
18.
Yeah. So Potter can't even get 2 points against Radar.
The other thing too that I love is Potter's losing to Radar, but earlier he's losing to Klinger at Horseshoes.
That's right. Yes. He's having a bad run of it. He's not Potter. Potter is many things, not athletic necessarily.
Right.
He can ride horses really well, but not play games. And then they start a new game, they do the final point, and Radar just completely dunks it on Colonel Potter. Potter misses it by about a foot, about 5 feet. And I love it's either Gary Berghoff or Radar himself. He's starting to laugh. You know, and he's like, I'm sorry, sir. And Potter's like, shut up. And he just gets so mad to him. Again, it feels very genuine. It's a great little fun way to end the episode.
Yeah, it's a nice little tack on the end.
Yeah. So that is Ping Pong. It's a really fun show, boosted by some great guest performances. You mentioned Robert Phelan as Blanchard, but again, it's Richard Narita and Sachiko. Are just great. I mean, so is Frank Maxwell. I don't mean to undersell him. He's kind of got a thankless role, and that we know he's a dick, willing to let people die just so he can get his Battlefield commission. But yeah, again, as I said, I would have loved to have seen Cho come back in later episodes, or at least referred to. But no, he just disappears, and then one of the many MASH characters that we will never see again. This was Sid Dorfman's last of 5 MASH scripts. He had scripts going across seasons 2 and 3. And here he was back for this one, and this is it. This is the last one he would do for the show. Again, I wonder why. It's a terrific script. I think he did a great job. And as I mentioned, William Jurgensen was the show's longtime cinematographer, but he also directed episodes, and this is one of the ones that he did. So overall, it's just a real, really fun show. Sean, I presume you have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
I actually have 2 different ones, if you'll indulge me. One of them actually is a funny line when Beckett is being rolled into the operating room. He says, did you see all those wounded? They're my boys. And PJ says, I bet your wife wanted a girl.
Ba-da-ba-ba.
Now, my other one is a favorite line. It's not funny, but it is Blanchard's speech. He's talking about, you know, being up at the front. And he says, and about how Beckett, you know, was freezing and he didn't withdraw. And he says, the men were laughing at him. And then he does that heavy sigh. He's like, well, none of them are laughing now.
Very dramatic.
Oh,
he really makes a meal out of that line. No one's laughing now. He really gets into it. Yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, Robert Phelan was terrific in the role. Again, it's a small role, but he was really good. So, and again, obviously he was good buddies with John Carpenter for having been in 2 of his movies, Halloween and Starman. So, good for Robert Phelan. My favorite joke actually is when Hawkeye and BJ are in Potter's office talking about the list of grievances. And Potter says, well, we all know when the good Lord gave out paranoia, Frank Burns got in line twice. And then Hawkeye holds up 4 fingers and he goes, three times. And then BJ bends one of the fingers down, and Hawkeye just goes, thank you. The third time, he denied ever being in line. I love the visual of that. I love the four fingers when he meant to do three. BJ flexes one down. It's kind of a bit, it's all just very silly. It's very Marx Brothers, but of course we know Hawkeye was, Alan Alda loved to do his Groucho Marx line. So just that whole bit is very funny to me. Like the way they're kind of playing off each other, it just makes me laugh. Of just BJ just going, and then Hawkeye just says that, thank you. Like he just doesn't know that his finger's being pushed down by BJ. I think it's just a really, really funny line. So, well, Sean, thank you once again for coming back to MASHcast and doing the season 5 show with me. I always appreciate it. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is your first MASHcast since you have officially joined the Fire and Water Podcast Network. So why don't you tell people where they can find you here?
You can find me at Batman Family Reunion with my Bat cousin, Paul Keene. Every month we talk about Batman family. It's a reunion. So of course there's lots of food, lots of stories about our relatives, our grandpas, our aunts, our uncles, Batman, Batwoman, all of the Batman family, and every month, the first Wednesday of the month, and we love it.
Absolutely. It's a great show, and we're very happy to have it here on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Now, of course, Batman Family Reunion runs, as you just said, on Wednesdays, which is the normal time slot for MASHcast. So for this month, you'll be getting two Sean Meyer shows in the space of 1 month, everybody. So enjoy that. We're thrilled to have you on the show, and I love Batman Family Reunion. So thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Loved it.
So, of course, everybody, we're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. You can find back episodes of the show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to MASHcast on any podcatcher of your choice. And then finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FWPodcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Britt Sham, Mike Thomas, Michael Porter, Joe Perino, Billy Shulman, Dennis Bailey, and Kara Kay for their support of MASHcast. I very much appreciate it. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you next episode. But until then, that is all.
Step on a feather, Frank?
You're a great judge of character, Pierce.
Right. I always knew you didn't have any.